Good evening, and you're listening to the Elchar Chronicles. I'm your host, Karen Elchar. This program chronicles issues of law and order and our local justice system, the environment, and indigenous issues with guests that dig deep into topics less talked about here in the Lehigh Valley. This evening, I am pleased to welcome Alex Shahbazi, Senior Manager, Arctic Programs with Ocean Conservancy, to discuss threats developing in the Arctic region, why these issues matter, and the impact to our region. So welcome, Alex, and thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm really pleased to have a chat with you.
So you're with a major nonprofit organization, the Ocean Conservancy. So if you could please just give a brief description of the organization and then your role.
Absolutely. Ocean Conservancy is a U.S.-based organization, but we do work to conserve the marine environment around the world. We have a lot of engagement in policy spheres and also a huge effort in coordinating coastal cleanups and to remove marine debris from our coasts and our oceans. That's a lot of things. I focus on the Arctic and particularly the international Arctic. And right now, my main aim is the Central Arctic Ocean, which is the high seas of the Arctic, about as far as you can get away from most other land masses in the Arctic as it surrounds the North Pole. But it's an area that's very interesting since it's been covered in sea ice for nearly all of human history, except for the past couple decades. It's starting to open up due to diminishing sea ice, which brings a lot of interesting things that haven't happened up there before. And when it comes to conserving that marine environment, a lot of different ways that we can try to approach that since it's a new area and means that we might need to come up with new innovative solutions to better preserve the ecosystems of the far north.
Mm-hmm. So what are the many hazards in developing this area? What's going on?
Absolutely. I think the easiest way is to do a very quick introduction to what the Central Arctic Ocean is, since I spend a lot of time thinking about it. But my bet is that most other people on the planet don't. The Central Arctic Ocean is, like I mentioned before, the high seas portion, which means no one country claims it as part of their waters. It's equivalent to the middle of the Pacific Ocean in that all countries equally have a stake in the game, so to speak, when it comes to at least the international legal mechanisms. Interestingly enough, like I also mentioned, that for most of human history, it was covered in sea ice. Permanent sea ice is what it was called only until a couple decades ago. This is many feet thick ice that, even though in the summer in the Central Arctic Ocean it's around the North Pole, which means you have months of daylight, months of summer, that ice never melted fully. And of course, during the winter, this is stocked in with months full of polar night. It's sort of the epitome of seasonal changes. And as the sea ice grows in the winter and shrinks in the summer, the Central Arctic Ocean had remained covered. That's no longer the case. The sea ice minimum happened last month, which just means that's the least amount of ice there per year. And more during that sea ice minimum, we are seeing more of this high seas area opened up and no longer covered in sea ice. As a place that has not been the space of industry before, the idea of moving industry into this new space, especially one that all countries have the ability to operate in, meant that we had to think about getting ahead of these new industries. The three main ones that we have looked at as the first ones moving into this space are fishing, shipping, and deep sea mining. Fisheries, which is great to report, is already being worked on. There's a treaty that has been organized since 2021 that has taken a precautionary pause to fishing to make sure that we understand what the impacts of fishing would happen in that space before actually going forward. But the other industries that are potentially moving into the area are things like shipping and deep sea mining. I think shipping is the one that people think about the most. The idea of sending ships across the North Pole has been talked about for many centuries. The first European explorers in the Arctic were searching for that fabled passageway, not having to go through the Suez Canal, not having to go through the Panama Canal, and thinking about going across the Arctic. While the idea of that is becoming a little more real in that sometime within the next couple decades there will be a summer without sea ice in the Arctic, that's still not the case. There's still lots of ice up there. The conditions, even at best, are very tricky. It's very far away from search and rescue. It's very far away from response. And anything that could happen with moving vessels in through there could wreck an environment that has, until only a couple decades ago, been covered in sea ice. So right now we're thinking about what best ways can we get companies and countries to take a precautionary pause. Not saying that industry might never make sense, but can we learn about the space? We know very little, because if you can't send a ship up there, you certainly can't send researchers up there in the same way too. And so can we let science, let indigenous knowledge come into that space first, understand what the impacts are, get all countries on board, whether it's Arctic nations or nations like European nations, Asian nations like China, Japan, and Korea that are also interested in operating there, bring them around the same table, bring their scientists around the same table to figure out if this makes sense, and if it does, how best to do it to preserve the ecosystems of the far north.
But that sounds like it's going to take such a long time to actually conduct all that research. So what can you do in the interim?
Absolutely. Well, the first thing is to set up the mechanisms to do that research first. I mentioned the fisheries are already being worked on. There's a treaty in place. And while that treaty, in essence, is a 16-year initial pause on fishing, in many ways, it's a science and research-based treaty in that it sets up this program for scientists from Arctic countries like the U.S., like Canada, like Norway, and scientists from non-Arctic countries that have expertise in the Arctic, like China, like other European nations, to come together and do that research. You know, it doesn't matter which country's vessel they're on, offering those vessels up to other nations' researchers and indigenous knowledge holders to understand that. To allow the research to the time it needs, what takes it first is bringing those nations together to agree on not sending up any vessels, not bringing industry into that space, and giving the science and indigenous knowledge, giving that research the time it needs. The fisheries agreement has been great for that, and we're hoping to see something similar with shipping and deep sea mining as well.
Mm-hmm. So eventually, the intent, presumably, you've mentioned indigenous populations. Are they a primary component in all of these discussions, as I would imagine they should be?
Yep, you are spot on. A lot of people that don't think about the Arctic as much as certainly I do often think of the Arctic and Antarctica very similarly. And in many ways, they are similar. They're ice-covered. They're the poles. They're very far away from most human populations. But the biggest, one of the two main differences in Antarctica and the Arctic is that the Arctic is a peopled place. There are about 4 million people that live in the Arctic. And like you mentioned, many of them are indigenous. Those indigenous communities rely intrinsically on the ecosystems for subsistence, for cultural continuity. These are communities that regularly go out and hunt the species that also inhabit these ecosystems that are crucial aspects to their basic nutritional value. Even though the Central Arctic Ocean is not directly off the coast, there's this concept in international law called the exclusive economic zone. All countries have 200 nautical miles off of their coast, so the Central Arctic Ocean is 201 nautical miles and beyond, but species like beluga whales, for instance, will regularly travel into the Central Arctic Ocean and back. So the conditions in that high seas area are crucial to how the conditions look like much closer to the coasts. Impacts negatively to the Central Arctic Ocean will negatively impact those coastal areas and really be a hindrance to the ability for these communities, these coastal indigenous communities, to continue their cultural practices, their subsistence practices that they've been doing for thousands of years. So when it comes to thinking about how best to conserve the ecosystems of the Arctic, it is essential that the needs of Arctic individuals, particularly Arctic indigenous communities, are at the forefront. The Central Arctic Ocean Fisheries Agreement did a very good step to bringing that in. The research program that I mentioned, it requires that indigenous knowledge holders are part of that research, and several of the country's delegations have included indigenous knowledge holders as well. That is an aspect that we're also really keen on making sure that the forefront of any other conservation efforts that happen up in the Arctic.
Mm-hmm. And do you know, have the indigenous populations up there already changed or adapted or starting to adapt to the transition, as you've mentioned, with the sea ice, et cetera, but other factors up in the Arctic?
Yeah, absolutely. The fabric of the Arctic is changing, both from an environmental situation, as climate change has caused sea ice mm-hmm. to diminish, but also as new industries and changes in vessel patterns and all of that have changed. There's a lot of adaptation that has to happen. For instance, in certain parts of the year, there are marine mammal species that are crucial subsistence species for indigenous communities, and they hang out near the ice edge. But as the ice edge gets further away, these communities are having to adapt and either travel much further on, which takes on different navigational issues, or think about what other species that might also be available at that time of year. It can be very tricky, and that's just one very small aspect. There's a lot of different things, like coastal erosion is changing the fabric of the communities, and they're also having to really understand that as the sea ice, which is a crucial climate regulator and weather regulator for the Arctic, as that diminishes, weather becomes less predictable. And so it's trying to understand how to operate in this changing environment in a safe way that also allows them to still access the resources that they've done for so long.
Mm-hmm. You also mentioned mining, resource mining. So when I had interviewed Chris Dorsett, and we were talking about the Ocean Twilight Zone, he also talked about how mining was becoming quasi-prominent. People, you know, companies want to go in and start mining resources. And do you see that happening up there, or is that just discussion at this point?
A bit of both. So the specific high seas portion of the Central Arctic Ocean, that's mostly just being discussed, although it is a unique space that has some question marks over which countries have claims to that area, which means that it's definitely a question that we should get ahead of. When it comes to the northern environments in general, the first foray into deep sea mining happened in the near Arctic. It happened in Norway. Norway is a big player in the Arctic, and they are a coastal state of the Central Arctic Ocean as well. And early 2024, they began a process towards exploring deep sea mining in their own waters. That's still currently on a hiatus, but that really brought the question of mining not just to the marine environment, but specifically to the Arctic. There are resources across the Arctic, including in the Central Arctic Ocean. And like I mentioned before, there's question marks over who has claim to that or what type of regulations are in place. And so with Norway exploring that first, with the idea of potentially other countries also exploring it in the Arctic, now is definitely the time to get ahead of it, because the sea ice has covered the CAO for so long, the Central Arctic Ocean. It does mean that, unlike other parts of the ocean and the world, we are able to get ahead of these concerns and proceed in a way that hopefully is the best for all parties involved, as opposed to trying to adapt to something that's already underway.
Mm. Let's stop just for a brief moment, and I'll reintroduce you. My guest is Alex Shabazi. He's the Senior Manager of Arctic Programs with Ocean Conservancy, and we're discussing threats developing in the Arctic region, why these issues matter, and the impact to our region. We're going to take a brief break, and we'll be right back.
For the past three decades, WDIY has sustained itself through direct contributions from listeners. Our model is simple. The people who listen to the service are the ones who support the service. As WDIY celebrates its landmark 30th anniversary, we invite you to join us as a WDIY member by making a membership gift today. This is something you could do right now to make a meaningful difference in your community. Call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or online at wdiy.org.
Well, welcome back. We're going to continue with my guest, Alex Shabazi, Senior Manager of Arctic Programs with the Ocean Conservancy. So what other issues are you seeing up there in the Arctic? What are your primary activities at this point?
Yeah, absolutely. Our primary activities are trying to promote cooperation. For the longest time, there was this concept of Arctic exceptionalism. It developed during the Cold War, and it was the idea that geopolitical issues happening in other parts of the planet didn't impact the Arctic in the same way, and things could happen differently in the Arctic. In that case, it was scientific collaboration between great powers at the time. It was international cooperation in many ways. The Arctic has been in the news a lot recently, and in many ways it's heating up from a climate standpoint, from a geopolitical standpoint. And that is definitely a risk to doing things in a precautionary manner, to prioritizing not just the interests of people, not just the interests of governments, but also prioritizing the ecosystems. And so one of the main things that we're trying to focus on right now is to try to continue to make the Arctic a place where countries from the Arctic and countries from not from the Arctic, scientists from the Arctic, scientists not from the Arctic, and people from the Arctic, people not from the Arctic, can all come together and still do things in a cooperative manner. When you build the table in the right way, and you of course give the people that live in the Arctic the place that they deserve, but also bring everyone to the table, that sets you up for success. And that's definitely, as geopolitics has been an interesting place recently, that is definitely one of our priorities of ensuring that we can still do things from a cooperative space in the Arctic.
Mm-hmm. So let me also bring in the third UN Ocean Conference that was held in June. What we're talking about now, was that also discussed at that UN conference?
It was. We were able to, from a specific Central Arctic Ocean standpoint, we hosted a reception that did a great job at bringing countries, again, Arctic countries and non-Arctic countries, including indigenous representatives as well, to talk about the Central Arctic Ocean as an important place in the global ocean where cooperation can lead to conservation. And the UN Ocean Conference was a great example of the idea of cooperation leading to conservation. Two of the main issues were President Macron came out with a statement saying that deep sea mining, we should pause that, and many countries followed suit. The other one was there's this high seas treaty known as the BB&J Treaty for Biodiversity Beyond National Jurisdiction, and it sets up a way for countries to agree how to conserve the high seas. Again, that's the area over which no one country has any claims. For different reasons, that treaty is yet to fully influence the Arctic region in a different way. The Arctic is a different place, but as this momentum towards really this cooperative environment towards conservation was built in France, in Nice, on the south coast of France during the UN Ocean Conference. It was a place where we were able to bring the issues specifically of the Arctic, specifically of the Central Arctic Ocean, and get folks thinking about that as an important space to cooperate on conservation as well.
So I'm located in Pennsylvania, obviously Allentown and Bethlehem area, Lehigh Valley. Why would our constituency here in Pennsylvania or throughout Pennsylvania, East Coast even, why would we be concerned? And are there things we can do to assist?
Yeah, absolutely. The Arctic and the Central Arctic Ocean are objectively very far away from Pennsylvania and other parts of the East Coast and the lower 48 of the U.S. in general, but that doesn't mean that its influence is not directly felt there. There are three main ways that the Arctic and specifically the Central Arctic Ocean influence what's happening in Pennsylvania. The first is through climate. The sea ice in the Arctic is considered in many ways the planet's air conditioner. It helps regulate global climate. I'm originally from the Midwest, and once every few years, we might get something called the polar vortex. Mm-hmm. Did a quick Google before, and I know Pennsylvania certainly gets that as well. That is due to an instability in the jet stream. The jet stream is a nice band of air currents that travel around the northern hemisphere, and that keeps really cold, really dry air circling around the pole, a literal polar vortex. But with less sea ice in the Arctic, with less sea ice specifically in the Central Arctic Ocean, that jet stream becomes weaker, and it becomes much more likely for that cold air to dip further down south. So when you're feeling those big polar vortex, if you see that in the news, that's because there's less sea ice in the Central Arctic Ocean. Another way is that with that less sea ice in the look, the weather patterns in the northern hemisphere being a little more erratic, you're more likely to see things like flooding, to see other more extreme weather events happening. So that is definitely eat into the conditions up directly around the North Pole. And then currents, ocean currents, the Gulf Stream, which comes from Florida and the Caribbean up down the southeast, brings some warm waters to the east coast of the U.S. and heads all the way up to Europe, keeping places like the U.K. much warmer than they should be for how far north they are. That also is directly influenced by conditions in the central Arctic Ocean as well. The more sea ice up in the Arctic, the cooler the water that comes out between Greenland and Norway is. That helps pump those ocean currents and keeps the warm water traveling up from the Caribbean and then mixes with the Arctic water, which drops below and returns down south. So the idea of warm water being off the east coast is definitely influenced by sea ice in the central Arctic Ocean. So those are the direct ways, but I think it's important to also remember that all Americans, regardless if you live in Pennsylvania or Alaska, are part of an Arctic nation. And so the conditions happening in the Arctic are directly an American issue to some degree as well. So whether you are in Pennsylvania, Florida, California, wherever in the U.S., it means that you are able to engage and participate directly in preserving places like the Central Arctic Ocean, which is one of the last environments in the world to open up and one of the last environments that we have the chance to get ahead of and really make sure that we do things right in preserving those ecosystems. So when the options or when issues of the Arctic come to places like Congress, staying involved, talking to members and making sure to let them know that even though folks in Pennsylvania are a bit further away from the Arctic than other places, that we're still part of an Arctic nation, and it's important to remember that and remind folks that are making decisions to remember that as well.
Mm. Do you have one political leader or several political leaders who you are working with?
We work with folks in the U.S., but we work with folks around the Arctic. I mentioned before that Ocean Conservancy is, despite being a U.S.-based organization, we do work globally, so we have worked with folks across the Arctic and other Arctic-involved countries, and we work with partners in Canada and Greenland as well, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is there anything else you'd like to mention? Oh, I guess I should also mention we have a very active Audubon Society, or several branches here in our Lehigh Valley area. And given what's going on up in the Arctic, you know, birds do migrate down towards our direction. Do you have any input on that?
Absolutely. That is it's a great point, and that's another way that places that aren't in the Arctic are also connected to conditions in the Arctic. My favorite animal is the Arctic tern, which is not an easy species to see in any one part of the U.S., but does travel from the Arctic down to Antarctica every year and back. That is the extreme example of migratory species, but many birds that you can find in Pennsylvania are going to be birds that spend time in the Arctic as well during the summer. And so if you see those birds, if you're an avid birder and you're able to find some birds that tend to spend time up in the far north, probably in Canada if they're coming through Pennsylvania, you see that, and that's seeing a part of the Arctic travel in your backyard.
Hmm. Is there anything else you'd like to mention?
I think just reiterating that the Central Arctic Ocean is really far away, but it's also a space that, by being high seas, it means that not just members of an Arctic nation like Americans, but all people around the world, in some ways, have a stake in the game. It's really a case of the opportunity to try to bring conservation to the forefront of a space. And so remembering that even if you are pretty far from the Arctic, that it's able to be involved in conserving it and making sure that parts of the ocean are, you know, the ocean is fully connected. So if you're standing looking over the Atlantic, the waters in the Atlantic are influenced by the waters in the Arctic as well. And remembering the connections that we all have to places around the world, whether you're in Pennsylvania, whether you're in Alaska, whether you're anywhere else, is that we all have the chance to get involved in preserving the Arctic, and whenever those opportunities arise, to grab it by the horns. One other thing that I think is important to think about when industries are talked about in the Arctic, and I mentioned it before, is shipping. When people think about industrial development in the north, it is shipping. I mentioned before that that's what Europeans were looking for centuries. And a lot of people talk about it as a positive because shipping across the Arctic does shorten the distance between the Pacific Ocean and the Atlantic Ocean. But there's a whole lot we don't know about shipping right now in the Arctic. But what we do know is that it's probably not the time to do that just yet. Right now, there is some shipping happening in the Russian Arctic inside their own territorial waters, which they are perfectly able to manage themselves. And there's a bit of shipping that happens in Canada as well. But just this past September, which I mentioned earlier, is the time of least amount of ice up in the Arctic. There were ships that got trapped or ran aground in both the Canadian Arctic and the Russian Arctic. So even in the theoretically best of conditions, it's not necessarily as safe as some might think it is. Again, that's not saying it should never happen, but there's a lot more research and consideration that need to take place in all parts of the Arctic, but specifically in a place like the Central Arctic Ocean, where theoretically any ship could go over the Central Arctic Ocean right now because it is part of the high seas. And that's the importance of thinking about it and making sure that there's research. And interestingly enough, I've been talking a lot about countries and what can happen from a policy standpoint. But there's a lot that can happen from companies specifically and a corporate standpoint. Since 2019, Ocean Conservancy has been supporting an Arctic shipping pledge where several dozen companies from around the world, including over 60% of global container traffic represented by the companies involved, have pledged, we're not going to ship across the Arctic right now. We don't think it's time. And these are the companies that you theoretically think would take most advantage of going across the Arctic, but they think about it as that's not a route that makes sense right now. Mediterranean Shipping Company, the world's largest shipping company, just came out with a statement recently saying that they are firmly committed to not sending ships across the Arctic, and they don't see it as a good business decision. So it's not just a policy aspect. There's not just a conservation aspect. There's a business aspect to not bringing industry to the Arctic as well. I also say that there's a science aspect, too. Another thing that happened at the UN Ocean Conference and something we were really proud to bring there is that we have supported a letter from over 1,000 scientists from the Arctic, but also from around the world, calling for a pause in industrial activity in the Central Arctic Ocean, saying, hey, we don't think it's time from a research and scientific standpoint to bring shipping up there, to bring mining up there, to also continue not bringing fishing up there. It's time to bring the research up there instead and to see what we can do when it comes to that shipping, when it comes to anything else coming up there.
Wonderful. My guest has been Alex Shahbazi, Senior Manager, Arctic Programs with the Ocean Conservancy, discussing threats developing in the Arctic region, why these issues matter, and the impact to our region. Well, thank you so much, Alex, for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure.
This is Karen Elchar. Thank you for tuning in to WDIY, and we'll see you next time on the Elchar Chronicles.